This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 72. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I am Tom Merritt.
And we have a great show tonight. We're actually going to be speaking to Christian Nairn, who plays Hodor on the Game of Thrones. Are you saying Hodor in the background?
Maybe.
You are. That's what you're doing, aren't you?
We will learn the proper pronunciation.
Yes, because I have a really hard time saying Hodor. Every time I say it, I can't get the rest of my sentence out. Like, it just stops my sentence somehow. I can't really explain it. But anyway, if you haven't listened to the show before, we are a sci-fi fantasy podcast. We talk about the... Stop it. I'm trying to introduce the show, Tom.
Hodor. Yes, we are a science fiction fantasy podcast. Carry on.
We are a science fiction and fantasy podcast. We talk about the most recent releases in the sci-fi fantasy genre world. We talk about what books we're reading. And sometimes we have excellent interviews like the one we have tonight.
But before we get to interviews and things such as that, let's have a few quick burns.
So I guess the new Joe Abercrombie book has a title, which is very exciting. Is this going to be like the sixth book in the series and the somewhat series-ish books that he's been writing so far?
He says he's finished the first draft of the second part of his latest book, and they're going to call it either A Red Country or just Red Country, but Red Country will be in the name. That'll be most of the name. And this is going to be a Western.
Ooh.
So what he's done is, after he had his first trilogy, he did two books that were sort of fantasy. Well, the first one was sort of a fantasy thriller. That was Best Served Cold. And then he did the one that I'm reading right now, The Heroes, which is sort of war fiction. And so the next one, Red Country, is going to be a Western. And I think what he's doing is he's using the same universe, but he's staying away from the main characters from the Kingkillers. And he's actually, or I'm sorry, from the First Law trilogy. And then he's trying out different genres. So I'm interested to see where he goes with this. The Western sounds like it'll be pretty fun.
You know, I picked up The Heroes again, and now that you say war story, I'm really, like, I was kind of thinking about this last night as I was reading, how very much in this one battle, this one time, at least, it is where I am in the book right now. And I'm assuming it probably stays in that same area throughout the rest of the story. But there's not that whole deviation of all these different characters going off into different places like the other stories.
Yeah, and that's on purpose. He's doing a genre mix. So it's still fantasy, and it's still the world you've come to know with the Northmen and all of that. But he's saying, well, I'm going to take kind of the quirks and the things of the war fiction genre and use them to guide the story, the way I took the thriller genre and did that in Best Served Cold. And when I started thinking about it that way, I was like, oh yeah, you know, Best Served Cold definitely pulls you through like a thriller, and it still has the fantasy elements. So the idea of him doing this and a Western, I think, could lend itself really well to this. I'm curious to see how it comes along.
Interesting that it's a Western and has country in the title.
Yeah. Country music.
Country Western.
Got both kinds.
I hope people are singing in this book.
And a red country means there's still going to be war.
Oh, just there's going to be a lot of bloody ground, I'm sure.
It's always war.
A lot of bloody, bloody ground. So we try to give you guys some pretty good book recommendations. But in this next article, can 32,000 data points yield the perfect book recommendation? They're looking at booklamp.org, which is the public face of the Book Genome Project, which was apparently started by the University of Idaho, students from that school in 2003. And serves to identify, track, and measure and study the features that make up a book using computational tools, and then serves to give you the best recommendations possible.
So if you don't know the service Pandora, the way it works is you put in the name of an artist or a song, and then it will start playing other songs that are similar that I think you might like because you like the first one. That's based on the work of the Music Genome Project. And the idea is they scan songs and look for certain characteristics and say, well, this song is similar to that song based on its beats per minute and the way the song is constructed. So the Book Lamp, based on the Book Genome Project, is trying to do the same thing. It's taking 32,000 different data points on every book that it scans in, including, you know, the way that the book is laid out, the frequency of words, plot order, all of this sort of thing, and says, well, let's try to find similar books so that if you like book A, you probably will like book B. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a website at booklamp.org. Their big success, they say, is when they type in like a Stephen King novel, you get recommended Richard Bachman. And Richard Bachman is a pseudonym of Stephen King. Computer doesn't know that.
Oh, that's so cool.
It still figures out like, oh, well, that's pretty similar writing style. So you'll probably like that. The problem is they are playing within the strictures of the publishing industry, not even just within copyright law, but they are playing very nicely with the publishing industry. So they're only scanning in books that they get permission to scan from the publishers.
Or couldn't they do books in the public domain as well?
Yeah, and they are doing books in the public domain, but all the books that are not in the public domain, they probably have a good fair use right to scan them in and do this, but because the publishing industry is so sensitive about this stuff and there's such a big deal over Google doing exactly that for indexing purposes, they've said, we're not going to cause any controversy. We're only going to put in books that come from the publishers. So the problem is not all the books are in there. For instance, Philip K. Dick is in there, but only like six of his books. And Frank Herbert isn't in there at all. So there were authors that I tried to put in and say, okay, I like this. What else are you going to give me? And I didn't get any results.
Oh, man. Let's try Joe Abercrombie, speaking of which.
Yeah, I tried him, actually. I don't.
Oh,
think
did you? Nothing?
But George R. R. Martin is in there. So you can try George R. R. Martin. And it's interesting. Of course, it's going to give you a bunch of his books.
Wow. It's really pulling up a lot.
Yeah, it just goes through and just starts matching everything.
Oh, you're right. It does pull up his books.
And when you go past him, you see Nancy McKenzie, Queen of Camelot, or Beatrice Small, Darling Jasmine. A lot of female writers. I thought that was really interesting.
That is. Rosalind Myers. Wow, there are a lot of girls here. Barbara Kyle, Lynn Fluing, Robin Hobb. Royal Assassin by Robin Hobb came up, which is one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
Susan Fraser King. I wonder if this is... Oh, and they have all the points that make it connect, and a lot of them is romance or caresses.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if it's all like the love scenes in there that are making it lean towards female writers.
And you know what? I never really thought about just how many love scenes there are in George R. R. Martin's work, but there are. There's a ton of them.
We've got a lot of... all his medieval weapons and armor point to his own books. That's hilarious. Features of the body, life, death, and spirituality, Catholic institutions. I love these different things they have, what's the term I'm looking for?
The data categories.
The subject, metadata that they're putting in here is very interesting. That's cool. It's cool to play around with a little bit and see what comes up.
Now, we also have news on China Mieville's next book. We don't know almost anything about it, but it will be called Rail Sea, or at least that's a working title for now, and it will be released in May of next year, May 2012. It'll be almost exactly a year after Embassy Town.
So we've got Rail Sea. What could that be? Is it like a train that crosses the sea?
Sea, yes.
Is it like instead of a boat, they put rails over the water?
Maybe it's a sea of rails.
Rail Sea. Yeah, maybe. It does sound kind of steampunky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it could be kind of steampunky. That's probably the best call here.
Yeah. Oh, and then, by the way, a lot of people were waiting with bated breath for the Hugo winners of 2011, and they were announced on Saturday night, this past Saturday, and got some pretty good ones in here. We've got, like, what do we have? Some of the, what are the winners? The winners for best novel was Blackout, All Clear by Connie Willis, which Adam over the Wart Zone was not happy about.
I know. He wrote up a pretty nasty, well, not nasty, but a pretty angry rant about that.
Like,
about
this
why
was,
it
this was poorly written. It was not that good. There were much other better novels out this year that should have won. Yeah, Adam.
Best new writer went to The Magicians by Lev Grossman.
Oh, nice. And Ted Chiang won best novella for The Life Cycle of Software Objects. That's pretty cool. Yeah, there's some good. I added a lot of these to my to-read list on Goodreads.
It's
best dramatic
place.
Presentation long form went to Inception.
Ah, very nice. And best short story for One of a Nail by Mary Robinette Kowal. It was published in Asimov's.
Oh, and to talk about the Wart Zone, by the way, he published a list of books, 10 books he thinks should have won instead.
Mm.
So there's a whole blog post about that in case
you're probably
interested.
A great list to add to your to read list right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the post is called The Hugo Awards Get It Wrong Again. And then he links to Here Are 10 Books, The Wart Zone Award for Best Novel in 2010. Oh, that was that last year then? Wouldn't it be 2011 for this year? Or was the Hugo Awards
for
2010?
I think these are books that are published in 2010, possibly.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Well, do you want to move on to the calendar?
Let's do. August 23rd, which is the day we're recording, so this may be yesterday for you. Mm-hmm. The Measure of the Magic, Legends of Shannara by Terry Brooks is out. After more than three decades of captivating epic fantasy readers, the storytelling magic of New York Times bestselling author Terry Brooks' Shannara Saga continues to enthrall. So go check out the next version.
Mm-hmm. And also on the 23rd, The Power of Six, I Am Number Four. We spoke about this last time by Pittacus Lore. So that's the sequel to I Am Number Four, which some people may be familiar with. They made a movie about that, too.
Yeah, so you know they're possibly going to make sequels. If you want to stay ahead of that, you might want to read this. Mm-hmm. Coming out September 6th, Legacy of Kings by C.S. Friedman. It's Celia Friedman's Magister trilogy coming to an end. So if you want to complete the trilogy, well, go read the first two books and then read this one.
Yes, and also on the 6th, Tears of the Sun, A Novel of Change by S.M. Sterling. Rudy McKenzie, now Artos, the High King of Montevale, must fulfill his destiny. He wields the sword crafted for him before he was born. He has made friends of his enemies. He has won the heart of the woman he loves. And now he must defeat the forces of the Church Universal and Triumphant, knowing he may lose his life in the final battle.
Aw, poor dying guy.
Well, after the Audible.com ad that we have, we'll jump right into the interview with Christian Nairn, so stay tuned. This podcast, of course, is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And one audiobook to consider is The Magicians by Lev Grossman. Who we mentioned earlier in the show.
That's new writer, Lev Grossman. You can go check him out. You can get it absolutely free by going to audiblepodcast.com/sword. Try out Audible, get a free book that you get to keep, and read Hugo Award winner, Campbell Award winner, technically, Lev Grossman, best new writer. Check out The Magicians, audiblepodcast.com/sword. And we thank Audible for their support. So if you're already an Audible user, pass that link around.
Pass
let other
on.
People know about
it. Pass it on. Oh, I forgot. We do have a couple of TV and movie news, and this fits in with our interview, so don't go away too fast. We have some Game of Thrones casting news and something for Croatian A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones fans. Is that
true? So filming of season two is moving to the Croatian city of Dubrovnik next month. I don't think we're going to ask Hodor about this, but the plans are for 4 weeks of filming to start September 19th. Parts of the city standing in for King's Landing. They're replacing Malta. They had used the city of Medina. In Malta as King's Landing. They're also going to use Dubrovnik as part of Quarth. Carth, I guess. Winter is Coming has a more detailed report if you want to check that out at winter-is-coming.
Well, it wouldn't really affect him because he doesn't go to any of those places anyway.
That's true. Yeah. He's not going to be headed to Carth or
King's Landing. There's no Hodor in King's Landing, as far as I remember.
But no anyway. Trip to Dubrovnik for Christian.
Oh, well, too bad. And then we've got three new actors for Game of Thrones. Una Chaplin will be playing Jane Westerling. Jane has a much bigger role in Book 5, but we will get to know her a little bit in the next season of Game of Thrones.
We also get Laura Pradelska, a German actress, who will be playing the role of Quaithe, the mysterious woman from the Shadowlands beyond Ashai. And I frankly had almost forgotten about Quaithe until I read this casting notice. Quaithe needs to come back into the story.
I feel like Daenerys was talking about Quaithe quite a bit during in Book 5, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but we didn't get to see her.
That's true. We didn't see. Yeah, yes, we did.
We can't. Her face is behind a lacquer
mat. Well, okay. Spoilers, damn it. See what you made me do. And then we've got Forbes KB. He's a Scottish actor, and he's going to be playing Black Loren, a noted Ironborn raider, a formidable warrior whose combat skills are greatly respected and is very loyal to the Greyjoys.
And then there's an interesting note on the Word Zone here that Ron Perlman, the star of Hellboy, actually would like to be cast. He has expressed an interest in roles on the show in an interview that was conducted over at AccessHollywood.com, where he laments on how Hollywood success has changed George R. R. Martin. I guess he's friends with Martin, so he's giving him a hard time. But yeah, I could totally see Perlman getting put in there somewhere.
I was looking at the comments, actually. People were talking about him perhaps doing Quarren Halfhand. Yeah. But I agree with one of the commenters who said that he would make a really good Tormund.
Oh, that's an excellent choice. Yeah, I could absolutely see Perlman as Tormund.
Because I agree with commenter Brett, who said Quarren seems more like a solemn, thoughtful, quiet character. And that does not really make me think of Ron Perlman.
No, definitely. And it does not make me think of Hellboy.
I also think him as being more Ben looking rather than someone big like Ron Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ben Jen. I'm trying to anglicize his name out of Westeros.
We've already got Dolorous Edd cast, so.
Yeah. All right, well, I don't have a sound for interviews, so after this brief momentary lapse in sound, we will jump right into our interview with Christian Nairn.
Odor.
Hey, everyone. We are very excited to be joined today by Christian Nairn, of course, who plays Hodor on the HBO series Game of Thrones. And Christian, I also have heard that you are an accomplished DJ. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about accomplished. I have been doing it for quite a few years. It's definitely my day job. I call that my day job. And Game of Thrones is definitely it's more fun. it's kind of like a little kid in a sweet shop when I go to work.
Nice.
Game of Thrones, it's kind of like a dream come true, really.
So what kind of music do you primarily DJ?
Basically different kinds of house. Mm-hmm. Funky house, progressive house. Most of the clubs I play in, they're quite commercial at the minute, so it's all very sort of mainstream.
Well, then it's a good thing that you're somewhat of a night owl. I know we have you on pretty late where you are right now. Where are you, actually?
Yeah, I'm actually in Belfast. I live pretty much 10 minutes away from where Game of Thrones is filmed.
Wow.
That's convenient.
Yeah. It means I can literally crawl out of my crypt 5 minutes before.
Yeah. That's a great moonlighting gig. You DJ for your main job, and then you moonlight as Hodor on Game of Thrones. I think a lot of people are impressed by that.
That sounds really fun. And I was going to say, what little time you have left, I know that you're also a WoW player, like Tom and I.
Yeah, I wish I could say that WoW comes third in that list of priorities, but it really doesn't. It's really just as important as the other two.
What do you play?
This is where it gets a bit sad. I have accounts on EU and ES, and I have basically duplicates of every class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty sad. I would say my mains are mage and shaman. So
good. I'm a mage myself,
and I'm a shaman. So.
Oh well, there you go.
Or you're in good company.
Yeah. So on the mage, I'm Arcane, and I'm a resto shaman.
Are you Horde or Alliance?
Oh, Horde.
All right.
Oh, good.
Phew. We can still talk to you.
I started off Alliance, and I sort of realized that I'm 35. I'm not like 8 years old, so I don't want to offend anybody. I obviously,
no, it's okay. They're Alliance. You can offend them.
Yeah, they're Alliance. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
I'm sort of a huge lore geek. So really, on each side of the fence, there's stuff that appeals to me. But yeah, definitely, wherever Thrall is, I will be.
Well, we should probably jump into some actual questions from our listeners and readers. The first one comes from Nick, and he has a two-parter here. He says, do you ever wish that your character was mute so you could stop saying Hodor?
Well, no, I know the character, or the portrayal of the character in the HBO show, he hasn't said Hodor as much as he would have in the books. Mm-hmm. I know he says a hell of a lot in the books. No, I don't, although I do see the role more physical than verbal, definitely. I like to sort of try and create the mood with my body language more than the word, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That's felt more natural. But no, I'm happy. I'll say Hodor till the cows come home, really.
We'd like you to say it more, actually, on the show. We're hoping that it ramps up a little bit in the next season.
It does ramp up.
Fantastic.
Okay. You're going to have some multiple Hodoring in season two, whatever you want to take that as.
Nice. And he also wants to know, did you answer a casting call? And if so, what was the character description?
Okay. I did not actually answer a casting call. I auditioned for a film called Hot Fuzz about 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I auditioned for the part which actually Rory McCann ended up getting, the guy who plays the Hound. Mm-hmm. So I auditioned for that part, and it was the same casting director. So she basically remembered me. Hmm. For the part of Hodor, I got the call. I did a very ill-prepared audition with like 3.5 minutes notice. And I was basically 99% sure I wasn't going to get the gig. But as fate would have it, yeah, I don't actually know what they were looking for, but I would imagine they were looking for a large man.
Well, what did they have you do? Did they? And what did they tell you about the character?
Well, yeah, this is a strange bit. This is a bit of a well-known story. I arrived at this sort of birthday party, and I didn't know the child. I was presented with a small child. And it was like, can you carry this child on your back? And I said, okay. So this is why basically there's an entire birthday party full of strangers watching me parade around the garden in the most unseemly fashion.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they handed me like a mahogany table. Sort of to prove how strong I was. Like, this table weighed a shit ton. Can I swear?
That's okay, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it weighed a ton. And it was also like 30 degrees heat. For the only day in Ireland that is warm. So I had to lift this table. And they killed me, but oh well. This is why it was just a very bizarre situation. Put it this way. I didn't know anything about the character. It was just basically like, say Hodor under the camera. So that was my old agent.
That was Taro's question. He was wondering in that audition, how much Hodoring you actually had to do.
Basically, they positioned three people on different sides of the camera, and they wanted like a raw reaction type Hodor. They sort of like would say my name, and I would sort of react to it. But that's basically it.
Yeah.
But it was actually my mother who. She's a huge Game of Thrones fan. I did not know this, and I sort of came home from the audition and told her about it, and she went, "No, you're not reading for Hodor." And she said, "Yeah, you have to take it."
Awesome.
That was great.
Yeah, so she sort of did a bit of a backflip.
So how much? So is she all caught up in the books?
Yeah. She's read. She's put me to shame. she had the book read within the first day. She's a demon reader.
Wow. So how much of the books have you read so far? I know that you were playing a little catch-up.
Yeah, really slowly. Wikipedia has been my friend, which is, I know it's a complete cop-out, but I'm not much of a reader. It's the same reason why I'm always up at 5 a.m. I can't turn my brain off. Mm-hmm. So I find books with loads of characters and stuff. I'm too busy thinking about going shopping or, like, I don't know, why is that the first example I can think of? That's terrible.
Right.
That's usually what I'm thinking about when I'm not reading. Yeah. Is where can I be shopping right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, but all these characters and stuff. Although it is easier now because I can obviously put faces to the characters.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I've met them.
That's actually something that I've been doing, but in reverse. I've read all the books, and now it's really interesting to put faces like yours to the characters that I already had kind of a preconceived notion about. But the TV show is definitely changing how I view the characters while I'm reading the books now.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I see you now when I read the books. I you are Hodor.
Mildly traumatizing, but yeah, I'm happy with that.
No, so you haven't read A Feast for Crows, then?
No.
That's no spoilers, but that's an interesting book for Hodor.
Oh, no, believe me, I know what happens. I know what happens.
All right,
right up until the end.
Oh, so they've spoiled everything for you already.
Well, no, I insisted.
Okay.
I don't care about anybody else, basically, as long as me and Bram. I just wanted to know what Isaac and I.
Yeah.
Did we die? Basically.
So you're like, give me the story of Hodor and what happens with him and Bran, and so that you kind of know what direction you're going in.
Well, it was actually more simple than that. It was basically picking up a Kindle and typing in the word Hodor. It's just terrible.
No, well, we should recommend, actually. I know you said that you were checking out Wikipedia, but I don't know if you've seen a wiki of Ice and Fire yet, but it's like the definitive Song of Ice and Fire series Wikipedia, kind of. It's like a separate Wikipedia. It's really, really intense and filled with information.
Yeah, we'll check it out. I know some of the fans have been like, for shame, Christian, you haven't read the books, but... My view is, I've sat beside George R. R. Martin and told him to his face I haven't read his books, so if I can do that, the rest of them take a hike.
Yeah, who cares about anyone else, right?
But it's no disrespect. The books are bloody incredible. Mm-hmm. His character development, I don't think anyone else is as detailed. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
So we wanted to also ask if you had any kind of input in how much Hodoring was going on the show. This is coming from listener Bean. He's wondering whether they're toning it down not to grate on people too much, because as we mentioned, there is a lot of, you know, Hodor. I can't even say it five times fast. That's my problem. I always try to
He's a professional, Veronica. Let him do it.
Yeah, can you
no,
say
I don't
it?
Do it.
Can you say
show me your show me the color of your mummy first?
That's right. Save it.
We don't want to ruin your accent or your throat or anything when you have to say your lines. So we don't want to pressure you too much.
I'd have to gargle first, and I don't have any sort of
warm-ups.
Yeah, do my operatic warm-ups.
You did mention that there's going to be more from Hodor in the next season. Why the difference in balance there, do you think?
Well, I think if you look at the sort of placing in the book in season one, although he is very much there, I don't think he played such a huge. He basically was a background character, although he was more woven into the story, I think. But obviously, with 10 episodes to play with, he had to be dropped out somewhat. But I definitely think with Bran's character in season two, he really has to be there more. Do you know what I mean? There's no other way. And as regards to the Hodor ring, yes, I think for your run-of-the-mill TV audience who don't really get the book, for me to be constantly standing in the background going, grunting in a very strange way, maybe rather irritating. But having said that, I have had some input in season two. I didn't in season one, but I have in season two so far.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next question comes from Alden. He wants to know, did you have problems walking around the castle? He says, I myself almost knocked myself out walking through a castle in Wales wearing a baseball cap. I walked straight into a stone door frame. I couldn't see because the pathbill blocked it. Can only imagine how tough that would be as tall as you are with someone riding piggyback on top of you.
Well, funny enough, in season one, that didn't happen, the piggyback thing. But... I hit my head all the time, every day. Oh, that's okay, man. I've dealt with it years ago. I've been to therapy and stuff. And, you know, it's actually the one thing that, you know, I'm a pretty docile type person. It's actually the one thing that winds me up. I can be a perfectly good mood. And I'll hit my head off something. And I'll turn into like a Wolverine and kill everything around me. But yeah, apart from that, yeah. No, I haven't had that problem in the castle, although actually, I don't know if I should share this or not, but this is actually a very Hodor-esque moment, I believe. we were shooting a scene recently, and Isaac was sort of beneath a tree, and I sort of picked him up with gusto and managed to smack his head off the tree branch, which I believe is what Hodor does.
You were just playing it true, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, there was paramedics and stuff. But he was completely fine. He's got the guy's got a hard head. So
that's great.
He's such a great kid. Like, he and I are very close.
I would imagine so. You would have to be. You work so much together.
Yeah, he feels like a little brother, to be honest. I'm immensely protective of him. He's just such a great kid, and he's so talented. Yeah. Obviously, all the kids are. I really actually believe they're the stars of the show, to be honest.
Yeah, they're some of my favorite characters, for sure.
Yeah.
And then Michael asks, do you think that Hodor has intense internal thought but is unable to communicate it effectively? He can clearly understand what other people expect of him and can look after himself in other ways.
Yes, I think he does. Obviously, that's only a personal point of view, and maybe I'm superimposing my own thoughts onto it. But yeah, I think he does. I think he's, definitely my version of Hodor might be slightly more sensitive than the one in the book. Maybe slightly darker. I don't know. I don't think I grin as much as he does. But I do think that he definitely understands. And I would really love in the next book something else to happen with sort of explain the whole Hodor thing, why he only says that. I actually believe it will happen. There's no sort of spoilers there. I don't know if it's going to happen. But
sure. I feel like I remember Martin saying at one point that you would get more about Hodor's backstory at some point. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, who knows? I definitely would. There's going to be some interesting scenes, definitely, between now and the latest book. I love the whole skin-changing working thing. It's going to be a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, we weren't going to talk about that because it is mildly spoilery, but it's okay. How do you feel about that stuff coming up in the future? I mean, that's going to definitely kind of stretch the boundaries of the Hodor-ness so far. See, I can't even say more. Every time I try to say Hodor, it ruins like the rest of my sentence for some reason. What do you think about that stuff coming up?
It's an American thing. Some people say Hodor, and I sort of worked out that might be like a radar for prostitutes.
I don't know. Hodor, starting up, I see seven of them approaching. Brian Brushwood, one of my co-hosts on another show, was told me, he's like, you have to ask him if there is an appropriate pronunciation or if it's kind of wide open.
Well, it's weird. If I was to say Hodor in my own accent, and obviously in American too, we really hang on the R's, we would say Hodor. Mm-hmm. That's how I would say it. But it's set in sort of like Northern England. Mm-hmm. So you sort of have to do the sort of dropped R. So it's kind of like Odo.
Huh. Interesting.
And also the rounding off of the R makes him sound a bit dumb. That sort of helps.
Yeah.
Have there been any other like spectacular moments while shooting the series so far that have really kind of stuck with you?
Oh, every moment is spectacular.
Yeah.
No. I'm just trying to think. I can't really say too much.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
How about from shooting the previous season then? Like any moments that made it into the show that you were just like, wow, I can't believe that happened.
It's really the cast. You have sort of reality check moments. Like you'll be standing there with Peter Dinklage. That's the first scene I ever did as a professional actor. I was standing, the professional bit is in inverted commas there, by the way. But standing with Peter Dinklage, and it's kind of like, is this really happening? Mm-hmm. Standing in a courtyard with Sean Bean, Mark Addy, Lena Headey, that sort of thing. That was actually, you know, that was the day. It was the King's arrival.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned it was seeing all the horses, the guardsmen. I sort of really understood the detail that HBO were going to, and I knew it was going to be, the minute I saw that, I knew it was going to be a hit, because I haven't seen anything with that much detail before. And they don't go over the top. I mean, it's not chintzy. I think that's why it works, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's why it appeals to a lot of people who maybe weren't originally fantasy fans as well, because it is not, it's not over the top. It's not ridiculous. We haven't seen anything yet, maybe with the exception of the dragons, that are really like a super fantasy world kind of thing. So I think that's why so many people are enjoying it that you would not normally expect to be into a fantasy style show.
Well, it almost feels vaguely historical, I think. I know some people say some of the events and almost feel like they're based in some historical events. Mm-hmm. I can't really draw any parallels there. I've just read it. But I think that's why people can relate to it.
I think actually The Red Wedding is based on historical fact. I'm trying to figure out where it's supposed to. It's based on the Black Dinner, which was a in Scotland, actually. It was an event that happened there. Very similar style circumstances. I'm looking at it on Wikipedia right now because I remembered that the Red Wedding was based on something. So there's one historical event. But yeah, otherwise, it's pretty interesting to try to think of where he got all these amazing ideas for such big things that happen in the stories.
Yeah, I know people have mentioned War of the Roses as well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the Lannister stuff, because it was Lancaster in the War of the Roses.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's very clever. I think that makes it relatable to the people, really. I think also the different families, to me, anyway, this is obviously only my personal opinion, they almost represent real life ethnic groups or times in history. I feel like the Starks represent almost like medieval, dark, depressing Dark Ages. I feel like the Lannisters are almost like kind of Roman, opulent, Italian-y sort of, that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And obviously the Persian sort of Dothraki.
Yeah, it's interesting to put it into parallels like that, for sure.
Yeah.
I often try to imagine if that society continued on for hundreds of years and they got technology the way we have, like how would a modern day Westeros look based on that history? How would it evolve?
Well, importantly, I would definitely have a golf cart for Bran.
Hodor would be
perhaps somewhat selfishly.
Yeah, I'd get one of those ones that follows you around the golf course. You know, yeah. I just sort of walk and he'll follow me. That's an interesting question. Like sort of maybe do like a steampunk type thing. Birth of technology. That would be really cool.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat. So other than Bran and Hodor, do you have any personal favorite characters that have sprung up from either your reading of the first book or from the show?
I really like Brienne.
Cool.
Yeah, obviously, and the person who plays her is amazing. People are going to love her. I think she's got an amazing character all the way through. I've done a bit of research there as well. and I loved King Robert. I think Mark Addy was superb. Couldn't have had a better cast for that. Yeah, I would say those are my two favorite characters. I loved King Robert.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some of the casting for the next season so far, and everything looks pretty dead on. And I love Brienne, too. I think people are worried that maybe she's too pretty for the role. But I think she's going to do a great job. I mean, I can really see her becoming that character.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They have amazing makeup artists, and I'm sure they will make a bang-up job of making her look terrible. And she's absolutely she's really tall. It's not solid me, like, but she's really tall. She's going to look great.
That's coming from you. That means a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, she's probably one of the tallest ladies I've ever seen, actually.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, she's going to kick ass.
So, is acting something that you've always been interested in, or is this how did acting come into your life?
Well, it's, you know, the way I always tell it is, I'm like an unguided missile. Really, things have just evolved continually. I started off in music since I was 3 years old in performance. That turned into stage performance. That turned into DJing. I studied a little bit of acting. I studied a little bit of music and live performance and production. And now this, I mean, it's came very naturally to me. Obviously, I don't have any real acting training, but like I say, it's never really been a problem, this kind of thing for me. Mm-hmm. Although it's always been live before, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like theater type stuff or DJing?
That's a difficult question. I did sort of live shows where I would produce the music and stuff and sing live and play the instruments live as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's obviously a very different medium, but for me it's the same sort of headspace to be in, the same performance headspace, just channeling it in a slightly different direction.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Did that sound artsy-fartsy enough?
Yes. That was perfect.
Okay.
Well, we won't keep you up too much longer, but where can people follow your work online?
Okay, I've got Twitter, Christian Nairn. I'm just at Christian Nairn. I've got a website, which is just up, actually, and that's christiannairn.com.
Very cool. We'll link to it in the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and we can't wait to see everything you do in the second season.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. It was great talking to you.
That was so awesome. I'm so happy we got a chance to talk to him. It was like past midnight where he is right now.
I know. He's a really, really nice guy to stay up and chat with crazy people like us. So thank you again, Christian.
Yeah, and thank you to all the readers who posted questions in the forums. There were some really good ones in there. And if you want to get in touch with us, the email address, as always, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. Let us know who you think we should talk to or interview in the future. I don't know how many more Game of Thrones people will be able to get on, but it would be fun if we could get more on, because I love talking to them. It's pretty awesome. And if you want to check out the website, it's swordandlaser.com. And all our discussions are happening over at Goodreads. Search for the Sword and Laser or follow the discussion tab on the website. We will see you guys next time.
See everybody.
Bye.